be led by Councilmember Reese, and then the invocation by Councilmember Crowley.
Everyone rise for the pledge. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Crowley?
Our Father in heaven, we're grateful to be here today, and we're grateful to be in a position to talk about city business and to try to do some good for our city today. And please bless us that we can be guided by thy Spirit, and we can do the things that will help our city in the most advantageous way to its residents. And bless us that we can have many good conversations today and accomplish much. And we say this in the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
Amen.
Thank you very much. Okay, moving on. Next item is the approval of the meeting's agenda tonight. So, Mrs. Reese, I think you're going to make a motion.
I move that we amend the agenda to move number 9 and number 12 before number 8.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been seconded by Mr. Geddes. Any discussion?
I'll just let you know we're amending that because the people for those items are here.
Yes. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving on to public comments. I did not see anyone had signed up for public comments when we got here. So unless someone is wanting to stand up now, I will close that part of the meeting and move on to a public hearing. We have one public hearing, and that is the amendments to the fiscal year 2017 budget. And is anyone here that has come to speak on the public hearing? No? We'll close that part of the agenda, move on to the consent agenda. So we have one appointment, David Bragonja.
Bragonji.
Bragonji. Thank you. Appointment to the Beautification, Recreation, Parks and Trails Citizens Advisory Committee. So if someone would like to make a motion on the consent agenda, I will take that.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
I second.
Mr. Geddes seconded it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving on now to city business. Mr. Goodwin, why don't you go ahead?
All right, we have an upcoming community policing, partners in policing event will be held here at the community center on March 8th at 7 o'clock. The topic that will be discussed is domestic violence. Presenter did a great job last time discussing active shooter events, and this is a topic that I think needs to be discussed more in our community, given light of the recent events in American Fork City.
When is that, Chandler?
It's March 8th at 7 o'clock.
Thank you.
We've also, based on the review action made by the City Council last council meeting, we've executed a contract with Six Sisters Grill, and they are working towards their soft opening date of March 1st. They're going to be ready to serve some food, and they're planning on a grand opening on April 1st, so we're looking forward to have some tenants in the grill to provide some food options for the city. Tickets are still available for the March 6th Utah Jazz New Orleans Pelicans game for the junior jazz season. And the golf course has opened and will be open pending weather allowing it. And the just for the council's information, the maintenance building has been delivered, is on site, and they've begun site work. So we'll look forward to that building being up.
Thank you very much.
So that committee policing meeting, is that here?
Yeah.
It's at 8?
7 o'clock, March 8.
7, March 8.
Mr. Geddes.
I have nothing to report.
Okay. Mrs. Reese.
I have nothing.
Okay. I just have a couple of items. Wanted to let you, there is a Lone Peak Public Safety meeting this Thursday morning, and I will report back on that once it's finished. We did have a finance committee meeting last week. Just myself and staff were there. Just a reminder, council members are invited, and very good council meeting. I mean, very good finance meeting. Charles got two more scheduled, I believe. Isn't that correct? And just let me know if you want to be there. And the first two that have agreed to be there, then we will take them.
Can you tell us the dates of those?
There's an email, and we can forward that on to you again. Also, wanted to bring you up to date on the interviews for city manager. And so Mr. Geddes and I met and narrowed a group down to about four or five that we liked. And then I did go through the process of interviewing every single member and every single applicant. And there was a few. I did add a few more names to our list. And so not this Thursday, but the following Thursday is the final interviews. And so I know a lot of you are going to be out of town and can't make it, but still welcome. I think Ben said that you were going to be there, right, Ben?
Yeah, I'm available.
And then staff members will be there too. So at the end of that day, hopefully we'll come up with one final name, and then I will submit that name to the council. So, Mayor, Mr. Crawley, do you have anything?
Mayor, do you plan on recording those interviews?
I hadn't planned on that.
It's with Skype. It's really easy to do.
So we'll talk about that.
That would give us some input so that, you know, if we're ratifying your decision.
Yeah. A lot of the interviews are by Skype. And so we'll see if there's something we can do. Okay. Mr. Crawley.
I have nothing, but I noticed that the February 28th and March 14th are the next finance meetings. So maybe that's it.
Okay. Mr. Zapala?
As the mayor indicated, we have Lone Peak Public Safety Board meeting this Thursday, so that's what I'll be attending.
Okay. Mr. Bailey?
The only thing is next month's 911 dispatch meeting will be held here in Cedar Hills.
Excellent.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay. That is city business, and now we're going to move on to our scheduled items. And our first moved up item is going to be originally number 9, which is an action item on awarding the bid for Parks, Trails, and Recreation Master Plan. Mr. Mogg, he's not here.
Hello.
Who's presenting? Charles going to present? Very good. And Susie Becker from Zions Bank is here, and she may have brought a friend with her as well. And so first we're going to have staff present, and then we'll have you guys for questions.
Hello. What's going on with this? Today I had a chance with our parks chairman to interview all the proposals, either by phone or in person. In your packet, I sent some analysis that I'd done last week, and it had to do with the price that each proposal was and the hours allocated to each area. First, I think all these firms are excellent, but they definitely have different strengths. And so I think it's important to know what a park master plan does and what it isn't. When I'm learning as I go on this, because this isn't my background necessarily. I do like trees and moving trees, but this is way bigger than that. So, first of all, what a park master plan does is it gets feedback from your community on the priorities of the residents, plus it looks at, based on what type of activities they participate in, whether it's in our programs or other programs, what type of facilities there's a need for. That's one thing that a park master plan does. Another thing is it also tells you or can tell you, based on the wants of your cities, what are the costs involved for those type of projects and how to plan for those, how to fund for those, depending on the council's guidance. What it doesn't include in the scope of these proposals is any schematic drawings that, once you've determined, okay, we'd like these improvements, It doesn't necessarily have the drawings yet to go with it, and that would be additional scope for most of these proposals. I didn't really realize that till later today that that wasn't part of it, so that was a little disappointing for me. Let me go through each of the firms, and then our low bid, Insight Design Group, is based out of American Fork and has done projects like the Creekside Park in Alpine with an innovative splash park that cost less than other splash pad parks because it drained into the secondary water, and that was the first of its kind in the state of Utah, at least. It's done a lot of schools, a lot of parks and churches, temples, and very beautiful designs, but we're not necessarily going to see those designs in this plant. So that's something to keep in mind. But very, I'd like Corey to talk a little bit from Insight Design. I want you to talk about the Alpine project a little bit and talk about the storm drain functionality of that and anything else.
I want you to
talk about some of your strengths with that project.
Just the Alpine Park. So what we did on the Alpine Park that was pretty unique is the Highland splash pad that you guys are probably familiar with was about $1 million. The splash pad that we did in Alpine was fourth of that, about $250,000. The way that we accomplished that was by not having to recirculate the water, build a facility to house the pumps and filtration and all of that type of stuff. From a Health County perspective, once water goes over a human body, they consider that it's, you know, contaminated, it's got to be flushed down the sewer and not be reused, or it's got to be treated. Treatment is obviously very, very expensive. And so because Alpine City has all pressurized irrigation and their water comes out of the mountain, we said, okay, there's deer, there's antelope, there's elk, there's cows going in and out of the stream. The water is not any dirtier. And so we were able to get the health department to sign off on us basically taking the water from the splash pad, putting it into an underground vault, and then recycling that water out into the landscape. So not only did we save the city $750,000, but we were able to also save them a lot of water and a lot of costs in dumping that stuff down the sewer. So that was just one innovation that we did. Some other innovations that we did is in helping the city, and where they saved a lot of money, was involving the community. They had a community tree planting day. We were able to save a lot of money. They were able to buy direct with some of the products, which saved them a lot of money and markups from the contractor. And we were also able to do some savings up front on design and engineering by doing some design build aspects instead of paying up front for some engineering.
Can you talk about the retention?
So the retention basin, I don't know, probably most of you have been to that park. If you have, I bet you most people don't even realize how much volume of water we can hold on that site. Most detention pond areas are very geometric in shape. One thing that we wanted to do was to create detention for the park in conjunction with a civil engineering firm, but we didn't want it to look like a detention area. So one end of the park is kind of bermed up, but the other almost 2 to 3 sides is really open. And so it just feels like a big open play field, but it doesn't feel or look like a detention pond that maybe you wouldn't want to go down into. So from an architecture perspective, we need to design for those type of spaces and to hold those things, but we want to do it in such an aesthetic way that it doesn't perceive, it's not perceived as simply a detention pond. That's my focus.
Which group were you with again?
Insight Design Group.
Okay.
Now, depending on the priors of the council, as far as design goes, I felt I liked this firm the strongest. Now, there's other parts to it. There's the community participation, reaching out. I feel like with Insight Design, there would be some additional costs. He can talk about that if you'd like, to get it to where it would be a survey that reaches, 95% confidence, and that you have confidence in the results of the survey. I think there would be some additional costs in that bid. So I want you to keep that in mind. On the landmark design, they have by far done the most master plans in the state of Utah. When I was talking to them in their interview, they said because we're not growing and there's not a lot of change in our city anticipated, that they normally don't include schematic designs, but they would, even though that wasn't a part of the proposal. So I'm not sure. I think that would be an additional cost, or we'd have to reduce another area in the other firms. So you might want to ask the other firms what they're willing to do there. If you'd like drawings that you can share with the residents on what the proposals are. On Sunrise, I checked references on all these, and they were all stellar. Every MGBA holiday, how do you say that? Holiday up in Salt Lake County. They're having them work on some trails. They've really appreciated the work that they've done. MGBA has done some design for our city in the past. They came extra mile, looked at a lot of our big parks, and got familiar with our city. They have a very good, I think, balance of communication mixed with designing to overcome maybe problem issues or making improvements. And Sunrise Engineering, we already have a relationship with Sunrise. We have a contract. They do our building inspections. They had recently renovated 9 parks in White County, Nevada, and the person was thrilled. The work they've done, they helped with the funding, applying for applications. Said they were great to work with, went the extra mile. This was a very hard analysis for me because this is not my expertise in parks. Okay, so I'm doing the best. But on a financial, you can see where they put their hours of time. I think most of these firms would be flexible if we wanted them to spend more time in one area. So I just kind of need to know what your priorities are, the communication side, the design side, trails, pool, whatever. Whatever, it kind of depends on what your priorities are, where their expertise is. I'm sorry this isn't really clear cut, but they're all very qualified and they all have different strengths.
I have a concern that we don't really know exactly how our park space is going to end up. So would it be wise to spend this much money when we don't even know what our resources are going to be for sure with the different parks that are out there?
So the reason why you would spend this money, one example is we want to be proactive and not reactive to situations like Heritage Park, where we have trees dying. We have a creek that's going to have a membrane under it, and the trees won't have that access to water. So there needs to be a plan of either replacing those trees or somehow putting the extra money in to irrigate them differently. and a big pruning plan, or it could be, there could be major things just to maintain what we have in that park. There could be, the other issue is we have a tentative plan that was made 10 years ago for baseball fields in Deerfield Park. Now, we have potentially, if the city purchases it, this land in the next year, it's important that we know if the priorities are still the same for the city as they were 10 years ago, or have they evolved because our demographics are older, because they've changed. So this kind of helps getting, we've had a lot of surveys in the past where about pools, and they were seemed very inconclusive, and I know some people wanted to kind of put that to rest either way. So
this is more about getting surveys of what the people want in the city than planning what we've got.
Can I just project just two points I wanted to make? On the Creek Inn Heritage Park, there's a plan that's been in place that is being proposed by Pleasant Grove Irrigation. That's the owner of the ditch there. They would like to enclose their ditch going through Cedar Hills just because of the conveyance loss in water that they're seeing. So they're wanting to see more of that water reach the end user rather than the trail. So you see, once they pipe that ditch, those trees that rely on that water are not going to have that as a source for water. So the city's been proposing, well, this creek is an asset to the city. We use it during the family festival. It adds to the park there. So there would possibly be, based on cost estimates, there could be an increase in cost that the city would have to pay to put a membrane over that trail. But still, that creates a problem where the trees don't receive that water. Either way, those trees lose a source of water. So the city has to find a way to either remove those trees or possibly replace those trees.
Yeah.
So that's one of the issues. The other issue is the city has done a park master plan. I want to say it was probably over 15 years ago. In that park master plan, they give a needs assessment based on population. So they would say, for every 1,000 residents, you need X number of soccer fields. Well, 15 years later, our city is very different. The needs of the city are very different. The interests of the city community may be very different as well. So what we want to do is we want to look at the community, get input from the community saying, what's more important to you? Is it football, soccer fields, or is it baseball diamonds? Before we go out and start master planning a large park, we want to make sure that the end result is a use that the city wants to use. And not only that, but we do have a large park infrastructure that's currently owned by the city. And we want to say that as the time comes to replace some of this equipment, as the time comes to maybe look at these parks, we want to make sure that we're putting in uses that actually interest the community, that actually invite the community into our parks. So that's kind of the background, I think, that of why this is important, why staff feels like this study is important.
So, Cheryl, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Are you comfortable recommending your top two or three favorites?
Have you had a chance to look at the proposals?
Well, you know that I have, but I'm asking for the council.
Yeah. I can make recommendations based on what your priorities are, because if it was me, I would actually want them to include some schematic designs also, and so. Without this landmark, I think Insight Design told me like it would be $3,500 to do the new park, just to give a sketch of what, based on people's priorities, give a sketch on that. Landmark Design has said that they would do schematic designs of each park.
Okay, so I just want to cut to the chase a little. So. Mm-hmm. Insight Design Group and Landmark Design are your two top picks. Is that correct?
I can tell you my top picks.
Hold on. I'm going somewhere.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he knows more about this than any of us. So if you're not comfortable with that, that's fine. But the point of my question was, if you do have two top picks, whichever they are, Mr. Crawley made a good question. I mean, he made a good point with his question, which was, it's not defined exactly what we want to do with the park. So if those two groups were your top two parks, do you have any reason to believe that those two groups couldn't do any of the scenarios that are being talked about? Splash pads, baseball diamonds, soccer fields, pool. I mean, both those firms could do all of those things, right? Because you asked for some feedback in terms of what's important to us. I'm not sure we know what's important to us.
Yes, but for example, Landmark Design, for sign, they wanted $8,000 more to do a scientific survey. So I could say, hey, I want Landmark. I think they do a great plan. But if you really want the best survey results, then they're not going to be as affordable as, and you might want to go somewhere else. It depends on, so if that's why I'm struggling.
Okay, that's all right. Do our friends from Zions Bank have something you want to add to this?
They're with MGB.
So. MGB?
Can we speak for
them?
Okay. You want to come up and introduce yourself and give us your thoughts?
Thank you for letting me take the time, Mayor. My name is Jay Ballwinkle from MGBA. We're out of Salt Lake City. Just a little background on us. We actually did the American Fort Parks Recreation Master Plan. Did 27 parks in one summer. Designed them one summer, installed them the next. So you probably play on Art Dye and some of those baseball parks. Those are ours. We did a Highlands Open Space Ordinance. We did all their parks there, maybe over 100 acres of parks for Highland. All these have the trails coming to your community, so we know where they are. And we have done a couple of projects here in Cedar Hills. We do a lot of park recreation master plans. We're doing one for Cedar City right now, just finishing up. And we've had Zions Bank is with us, help us with a statistically valid survey. We do have, everything's in our proposal. We'll do schematic design. We'll do nuts to soup to nuts. Everything's in there that we can do. We've done 200 parks along the Wasatch Front. We've been around since the 50s. So we know how to do this. We've done parks for many, many years. And we do parks and recreation master plans frequently. We did Thanksgiving Point, if you want to have an example of some of the work that we've done. So just that's kind of a background on MGBA. We'd be happy to. We look forward to work with the Cedar Hills. We've done work with you in the past. We'd love to continue in relationship and help out there. That's essentially who we are.
Council, have any questions for him?
I do.
Go ahead.
So there's a couple of things I wanted to raise with you.
Yes.
I really like your proposal because I like that it is fairly comprehensive. And I like that you have in there an advisory committee.
Yes.
One of the things that we have difficulty with in Cedar Hills is that you can schedule a public hearing, mm-hmm. a town hall meeting, and say, hey, everybody come and give us your input on parks and trails, and you might get 5 or 10 people.
Yes, that happens frequently.
And so I like that you've got in there. I think the idea of your advisory committee is that the city would help select residents that are representative throughout our city, and they commit to meeting with you regularly and giving you input.
That's key.
Is that correct?
Important. Another thing, let me tell you one more thing. Usually the online survey, you can get at least 10 to 20 times what you get in a public meeting. So we usually do the public meeting and then invite people online through your email systems and whatnot to participate.
Yeah, we've run surveys like that.
So you get a lot more success if you get,
I guess the question I had for you is we have a couple of big issues that we're teasing about, that Rob was referring to some of them. One is that we've had on our master plan a park that we have not yet acquired land for, and so there's an unknown there. Mm-hmm. One is that we have done surveys on residents' desires for things like a pool, and usually we have around 60% who say they want a pool, and you know, we need some work on figuring out where that might be, what that might cost, not just construction, but ongoing maintenance.
Oh, sure.
And then the third issue is we have over on Canyon Road over here, we have what we call St. Andrews Estates. It's a former hole on our golf course. We cleared it out to put in development, but there's significant desire from at least some of our residents say, no, maybe we should use that for more parks.
Yes.
And so it's another variable that we need to look at. I assume in your proposal we can
Oh, yes.
Look at all these different variables and take those all into account.
We're very flexible to
that's part of our goal of wanting to do a master plan.
No, we wanted to be comprehensive so we could allow all kinds of flexibility like that and consider all these open spaces that are in your plan. We're a little bit more expensive as far as price goes. That's what we wanted to have, the whole deal, that nothing would change. We'll give you as much flexibility in working on those kind of places as you need with an ad hoc committee, with a group advisory committee to help with that. So, yes, we're wide open to that.
Okay. Any other questions?
I know Boyd's here. I was just wondering if he had any input since he's the chair of the Parks and Trails Committee.
Boyd's been really great, by the way. Really
he helpful. Is fantastic.
He took us on a tour of all the parks. We had a great time one day spending the day with him looking at the parks. Very good resource for the city.
I think the other firms want to say a little bit.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
So Sunrise, if you want to go.
Any other things for me?
If we have representation from more firms, then let's welcome them up. Thank you so much for being here. Okay, come on up.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Steve Hansen. I work for Sunrise Engineering.
I'm sorry, say that again.
My name's Steve Hansen. I work for Sunrise Engineering.
Sunrise, okay.
And we approached this RFP as a response for a master plan for parks. And what I'm getting at with that is, I believe right now at this point, you know, there's area there that needs to be developed or that can be developed for parks. And it's a matter of determining what the needs are of the city and what they would like for those parks and how to best utilize those areas and the spaces for parks. And as we approach it, we are an engineering company. We approach it similar to a capital facilities master plan or a capital facilities plan or a water master plan type thing where we would look at the existing facilities that you have for parks and recs. We'd look at the open spaces and the area and the needs of the city that you foresee. And then we would also determine what the community desires, and the public involvement part of that is we've discussed how that's typically done. There's a Survey Monkey, there's other online types of surveys. One of the things we like to do as well is we like to have an open house rather than like a council meeting or a specific meeting, just kind of an open house. Give members of the community a time frame when they can stop by and see examples of what they could get in a park. You know, what a splash pad would look like, what a pool would look like, or what a, you know, who's interested in pickleball or whatever. So we approach this really as a capital facilities plan or master's plan, where we would look at your needs and then you would project out in the future, you know, when do these needs come along? And then obviously each of these parks would have a cost associated with them, and what would it take to pay for these future facilities. And it also would look at your existing facilities, how old are they? And what upgrades do they need, and what it would take to update those. And then similar to a facilities plan, you come up with a capital facilities project list, and as you have the money in the council, or if you need funding, or if you have needs as they come up, then you can base your decisions based off of that project list. And so that's kind of how we approached it. As far as specific design, obviously that's what everybody wants to see, and that's what the public's very interested in. But at this stage, I believe that it's you're at a more deeper planning stage where you need to come up with a plan of what you want to do with all your parks and areas. So that's kind of what I have to say. I don't know if you have any specific questions for me on that.
Any questions for Sunrise Engineering? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else from Master Plan Group that we haven't called on? Yes.
I think
we will get to both of you.
I got. You found it. Sorry. I got an email. I was just looking that she was lost in my other offices. Would you like to come up, please? And then I didn't really like to say whatever you want, so we'll have to go after.
Hi, I'm Lisa Benson with Landmark Design. I'm sorry Mark couldn't be here tonight, but he's at an adoption hearing for another Parks, Rec, and Trails master plan right now. I think that you guys are definitely thinking comprehensively, and I think that that's our approach. You know, we like to look at things, not only your needs based on level of service, you know, looking at park acres per population. We also like to look at distribution. You know, do you have gaps of service?
Can you tell me your name and what company you're with again? I missed that.
I'm sorry, Lisa Benson with Landmark Design. Yeah. And so we look not only at level of service for park acres, we look at distribution to see if you have any gaps, you know, see how those are connected by trails. But we also start looking at amenities, you know, what are your amenity service levels, you know, within those parks? Are there features that people want to see? You know, are there features that are missing? And so we like to get a comprehensive approach, and we can even establish a level of service for amenities. And Mark was talking about the scope of this project and the size of your community, and that with this park budget, with this project budget, we could also get down to a little bit of a level of a conceptual design for some of the facilities that you have online, but you know, not really detailed, but we can start looking at some of that conceptual design. But I think public involvement is a component that Landmark feels really strongly about, and we're really excited that you have that you're open to a scoping committee or a steering committee, because we think it's really important to make sure that you have planning commission, you know, on board, a representative from the city council, various representatives from the community, just so everybody understands how the process works, because a lot of people think that you're going to get right into the detailed design of facilities, like we're going to be designing splash pad or we're going to be designing, you know, a specific park. So we like to start with that big picture analysis first and make sure that we're meeting your needs and that sort of thing. And then just those public meetings, making sure that we have the opportunity, because you have a segment of the population that usually likes to meet face-to-face, and then you also have those that like that feel more comfortable giving detailed input online. So we like to be really comprehensive in our approach.
Any questions for Landmark?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Gentleman from Insight, are you wanting to come back up?
Sure. So I just wanted to highlight just a couple of things. I know all of the firms, and I would say that no matter what you choose as a city, I think that you'll be in good hands. There's a lot of great experience here from everyone. A couple of key things from us and our perspective, and something I think that makes us a little bit unique, is our vast construction experience and our vast knowledge of construction pricing. The last thing that any city would want to do, or any customer of ours, is to design something that then you can't afford, or that your citizens can't afford. Because of our vast construction experience, we know what projects cost. We can be able to forecast and project those accurately. One of our biggest clients that we've done a lot of work for over the years is the LDS Church, and they have commented directly to us about how accurate our pricing is. When we give them a budget, we come under budget. And they've shared with us that that hasn't been the same with all of their consultants. And so that was nice that they understand that. Having spent many, many years in construction of all different sorts and putting myself through school doing landscape construction, we understand what that costs. So we're able to come in and help you guys forecast realistically what it is. Any of the five of us companies, I feel comfortable, could go out, inventory the parks, do the surveys, do all those type of things, and put that together. But understanding the next phase and how that's going to go and how you're going to budget and being able to do that takes experience. Another benefit that I think that we bring to the table is because we're a smaller organization, myself with 20 years experience, my business partner with 15 years experience, and our senior landscape architect with 25 years experience, the three of us are going to do the bulk of the work of this project. So it's not, you know, someone that's just out of school for a couple of years, although we have that on our staff as well. But having spent, you know, the years and the experience, obviously, or like anyone, you learn by doing. And because of the experience that we have from large projects to small projects, we feel like we can bring a lot of realistic solutions as well as value engineering to the city and creative ideas like we did for the Alpine Park and many other projects. Working with an advisory committee, I believe, is key. That's already been mentioned. Working with neighborhood groups and things like that, which we have done before, and group meetings and city things, I think is key as well for any firm that you decide to choose.
Thank you. Any questions for Insight Design Group?
Yes.
Thank you.
Really good choices. So if you guys feel like the fruit is ripe and you're ready to move on this, I'll take a motion. If you feel like something that council needs to spend more time on, I would understand that as well. So someone want to make a motion or ask a question?
I'll just make a comment. I guess I'm still trying to figure out if I am on board for even spending this money right now.
Yeah.
So to choose someone is the next step after that.
That's why I asked if you felt like the fruit was ripe.
Right. I don't feel like it is. I feel like when we're talking this type of money that we need a little more discussion over what our goals are with this and make sure that we all agree with the goal. And maybe I was asleep at the wheel, but I didn't know this was coming until I saw the agenda, you know, when the packet came out. I didn't know that we'd approved this money to be spent, and maybe it's been talked about, but I can't remember it. So
yeah, that's anyway. What the action item is. But you obviously have a motion that you can make if you feel you're not ready, and people will support that or not.
I motion that we wait till next meeting to make a decision on this.
That we table it, yeah, and bring it up at a future point. So I have a motion to table this and bring it back at a future meeting. Is there a second on that?
I'll second.
It's been seconded. Any further discussion?
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I spent some time looking at proposals, so I'm not ready to table it. I really like MGB plus A, and there's a couple reasons why I like that. They have designed master plans for a lot of the cities around here. They have a really nice structure with an advisory committee that's going to meet six times. They have invested some time getting to know our city, and they recognize some of the unique aspects of Cedar Hills, like the fact that we might want to cooperate with some nearby cities for recreation opportunities instead of doing it all ourselves. I think it's really important to get a master plan going and underway. We have a fairly old master plan that doesn't take into account the particular needs of our city right now. It's out of date. We have, as I mentioned, a number of things that are really pressing on us to figure out. We have residents that are asking me, when are we going to get moving on deciding whether we're going to do a pool, or are we just going to keep using other cities' pools? I have other residents saying, what are we going to do with St. Andrew's Estates? We need to figure these sort of things out, and that's exactly what a master plan does, is that we talk to the community and find out, what do our residents want, and how do we plan for that future?
So I have a buyer and a seller. In my world, that's called a market. And so, Mr. Bailey?
You know what? I echo Daniel's
anything for
master plan. So, yeah.
Table?
I'm happy to table.
I do have a motion.
The only discussion I was going to add to that, I completely agree with what you're saying. From my perspective, I would like a little bit more time. I'm showing I got it about Thursday evening or Thursday 4 o'clock, and it was a holiday weekend, and I was gone all weekend, and I have not had a chance to look through all those proposals. We're 110 pages worth of proposals to go through. So I think, like Councilmember Crawley, we did bring it up at the retreat in January, but it is relatively new discussion, so I don't mind tabling it for 2 weeks just to give us a little bit more time to go through everything and make sure we're all on board.
Okay, I have a motion that's been seconded. We've had some discussions. Let's have a vote. Starting from my left, Mr. Geddes, this is to table it. So, aye. Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Nay.
Mr. Bailey.
Nay.
3 ayes, 2 nays. The ayes have it. It is tabled to a future meeting. Thank you very much to everyone that has shown up here today. We appreciate your participation, and we will be back. Okay. Now we're moving on to number 12, which has now been moved up, which is the discussion on Highland Gardens water connection. Just 1 second, Ken. I think Chandler, are you going to make a presentation, or are we going to turn it directly over to Mr. Stratton?
Turn it directly over to Mr. Stratton.
Ken, if you want to come forward. There's not a staff presentation, so time is all yours. And just introduce yourself by name so it's on record, and then we'll have a discussion.
Perfect. Ken Stratton. I'm the owner of Highland Gardens. Would you all like to have this in front of you while we talk?
That'd be great.
A map of what we're doing down at our...
I think we have that.
Yeah. At our
that's brilliant.
Yes or no?
We have it.
Do you have extra copies?
Pardon me?
If you have extra copies, I'll take them.
If you want.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'll take one.
Thank you. The maps we have are for that city property that we're going to discuss in the parcels that are planned on.
So what this basically shows is our property, excluding the greenhouses. It shows our retail, our existing reception center, and the water lines that are servicing those right now. And I don't want to take too much of your time, so I'd like to be very brief and to the point. How much time do you want me to take?
Just go ahead.
Feel free to take as much as you want. We want to hear
get to the point.
Detail.
Okay. About almost three years ago, American Fork City came to me and asked me to put in a fire sprinkler system to our reception center. That required a 6-inch connection into Cedar Hills water line because Cedar Hills provides us water, American Fork water through your line. That makes sense. You all familiar with that? So when we came to Cedar Hills to apply for the permit, one of the restrictions or one of the stipulations is that we put a 6-inch meter on this fire line. We eliminate the existing 2-inch meter, and so everything is tied into 1 meter. Does that make sense? What you're looking at on that paper, the pink line, is the 6-inch fire line that we installed. The green line is the 2-inch culinary line that services our facility. It does all the watering for our flowers, our reception center, and the stores, okay?
And is that coming from Cedar Hills as well?
Yeah, both of them. Are you familiar that I don't know the agreement, but there's an agreement, since American Fork does not have water past the canal, that their water comes through your lines? I say I don't understand the agreement. I just know it happens to be in place. Anyway, so everybody I've talked to, and I've included some names up there on that, you can see that piece of paper. Putting a 6-inch meter on a fire line is never recommended. It's never been done in the state. It's never been done in your city. Everybody from fire marshals to other water engineers to construction people say that this is not typical, it's not recommended, and it shouldn't be done. So I've been hesitant to even put it in. I've stalled about it.
Can I interrupt you though for a second?
Pardon me?
So as far as that 6-inch line, I believe, as I understand the situation, the AF City has requested that as well, correct?
They required it, yeah.
Yes.
It had to be. It had a fire line, which services the sprinkling system like you have in this building, and also the fire hydrants, which is your fire protection system.
Right.
Requires a 6-inch line just to supply the flow and the pressure to have adequate. That was required, exactly. That was part of the requirement from American Fork City.
So what part is unusual then?
What's that?
I guess I'm confused because first you said that it isn't done, but then now you're saying that it's required and you have to do it.
It's in and installed.
The meters you're saying is what's...
No, the meter has not been installed.
Right.
That's okay. The part that is unusual.
That has not been installed. And that's the issue that we're dealing with tonight, whether we should or should have to put a 6-inch meter in. Okay. The cost of this 6-inch meter with the vaults and everything and the installation and the bypass valves and the double check valves that Jeff has asked for is about $30,000, give or take. Okay. So... And I'm not even sure, I've heard different people tell me different things that it's actually not even, that it goes against code to tie a culinary system into a fire line, that you can't have them.
That's not
true. They've got to be separate.
That's not true. Just so you know, I'm the fire marshal for this area, that's not true. You can.
Can you tell me that's not true?
Yeah, that's not. You can have a culinary system into your fire.
We service all of our fire lines with culinary water.
Yeah.
We turn off our pressurized irrigation
half the year. Everybody does it.
Does what?
Services their fire suppression systems with culinary water.
Okay.
Yeah. Because just like Chandler said, we turn off our PI during the winter. Mm-hmm. If we turn that off, then you wouldn't have any fire protection during the winter. You'd only have it during the summer.
So all this is tied into the colony. What I'm saying is there are two separate lines going into any business. Like, for example, into this building here, you have the culinary
line. There's two different. Yeah, but they're both off the culinary line.
Yeah, they're both off culinary, but you have the culinary line, which is metered. And then you have a separate 6-inch line, which is a straight flow.
That is true. Well, for this, didn't Jeff say that all of the buildings in Cedar Hills with fire protection have meters?
No, they don't.
No, because we own the water system. The issue is they...
What about backflow preventers? Do they have backflow preventers?
No, the issue here is where we're providing service outside of the city's jurisdiction.
Correct.
This is where staff's coming in and saying, no, we need to meter it, because otherwise there's the option to take water without us even ever knowing about it, because it wouldn't be metered. And the other issue is to protect the city's culinary system in the case of a pressure change from backflow. We've seen what happens before on this, so we want to make sure that we're protecting the city's infrastructure in this decision as well.
Yeah, so we've installed this and built it like it's built in every other building in your city that has. Okay, it's done now.
The issue that I see is, you hit it right on the bed, like every other building in our city.
Yeah.
This building is not in our city.
Exactly.
And so... How do we know where that water's going? How do we know that it's being protected? And
see,
we have to look at it from a not a financial. I understand that $30,000 is a lot of money. Don't get me wrong for anybody here, but we have to protect the interests of the city, not of business owners, especially so those with outside of the city.
And that's where the issue came, is the reason that this 6-inch meter is being required of us. Is that Jeff, or whoever made the decision, I understand it came from Jeff, is afraid that we're going to tap into it with still water. That after the fact, we will dig in, tap into it, hook it into our system, and water our flowers or do whatever else with it. Okay, that's the fear. Am I right on that?
I wouldn't say the only fear.
It's a fear.
I'm more concerned about the backflow.
The backflow, especially coming from a...
Is there a way to solve that without a $30,000 expenditure, the backflow issue?
Well, is there a backflow issue on all your other buildings?
No, but what the issue is where this is in American Fork, we don't have jurisdiction, we don't have an easement to go and check. So we need to put checks in place that protect the city's infrastructure. That's why we're requiring this type of infrastructure.
So let's say he was in Cedar Hills. Is there anything that we have in place, if he is in Cedar Hills, that would protect us from backflow or from stealing water that we don't have with him? Let's say that the boundary was...
Yeah, we can go check it. Walmart doesn't have a...
So what if he... So what if a solution was that he agreed to let us check it? Would that be a good solution?
I'm not comfortable with that solution.
Okay, why not?
Just because I have to go with Jeff's expertise on this.
Right.
I've been involved in this situation. He's explained to me a number of times, and right. I look at it as Jeff is ultimately, it's the city's infrastructure that keeps him up at night. It's being able to supply water, clean water. So I'm not going to go against Jeff on this. I'm not going to.
I don't want it to become a personal issue and say we're going against someone.
I'm just going to defer to Jeff's expertise right. after documenting.
Maybe I just need to talk to Jeff about it. But I don't see us having any more protection for a business that's in our city than this one, especially if he's willing. Would you be willing to let us come and inspect anytime we wanted to?
I told Jeff we'd give you an easement. I haven't disagreed with anything that Jeff has asked,
right.
other than the requirement of putting this in.
Right.
It not only is a money issue, it just does not make sense because it's simply never been done. It's not done typically. Mm-hmm. What you're asking of us is not done anywhere.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question for that. I mean, I'm a developer, so I'm sympathetic to where you are.
Okay.
The money is certainly an issue, but it's not the only issue.
Yeah, it's not the only issue. It's about doing something the right way.
Right. And anytime when you throw out glowing generalities, it's never been approved. You have given us some names,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't help.
I think if I were going to change our city's position or go against the city manager, then I would expect that you would supply us with a letter from Kelly Snow or Coy Porter explaining why they would say this is unprecedented, never happened in the state.
I'll definitely supply
it. I've just never heard that. I mean, it's great to say that, and I trust you, but I just met you. I mean, I drive by your place every day, but you know, I think you do a great job with what you do over there. And so I'd like to help. It's not just money, and it's protecting, you know, we got this issue because we overlap a little bit with the city.
I'll definitely go to all these people, contractors and everybody, and have them write letters, if that's what you'd
like. I mean, there's nothing, I mean, I believe Jeff Mogg, and I'm going to ask a question. This has come up even when, because Jeff's not an engineer, but our former city manager slash city engineer was an engineer. He's weighed in this.
He weighed in, and he's the city administrator for American Pork, as already know. That yes, the city should require these upgrades.
So I would kind of trust a guy with, you know, engineering background, city engineering background, private engineering background. If you're saying this is so abnormal and out of the ordinary, I would expect you to come to us with some.
Can I ask you a question? The city, if you know your city, of all the buildings in the city that has fire protection, sprinkler systems, and that 6-inch line, how many of them have a meter and a backflow preventer on it?
None.
But they're all in city, they're all under city's jurisdiction.
Exactly. So,
and if the only difference is whether we can inspect it or not, and he's willing to let us inspect.
So there's really no danger in what we're asking for what we've done, other than the fact that there's a fear that we might steal water. Okay, so if you want me to supply letters that it's not, I mean, it's obvious that it's never been done in your city. So
right, but there's never been an over, I'd like to understand that they understand the whole situation. You're not in our city. You're taking water from our city's facility.
Because you have an agreement with American Fork that says you will supply water to the not only us, but the homes. There's an agreement there. So I understand I'm not in your city, but that agreement to me gives me the right to attach into your water line.
But that agreement also says we meter all the water going out. So, okay, exactly. So then why wouldn't we want to meter this?
Just because it's never going to get used.
But we don't know that. And you don't know that.
Okay.
A couple questions I have real quick. I'd like to know how we handle it for Warinsky. Because they're in the same situation, right? They're a business in AF that I'm assuming we're supplying water to. Yeah. So I'd like to know how it's being handled for a Warinsky funeral home. And I'm also just curious, if the permit was issued on November of 2015 with this requirement of the 6-inch meter, why did your contractor install the line with the intention not to fulfill the permit requirements?
He what?
Your contractor installed the line knowing that this was required.
Because American Fork City said do it.
Even though they knew they were violating the permit.
Exactly. We had no option.
So why didn't you come to us and let us know, hey, they're wanting us to violate the permit?
I've been talking to Jeff. We've been talking about this, and Jeff has been in meetings with American Fork City several times. Jeff knew about this.
But as I understand it, there's a little bit of issue, too. This goes to the dollars a little bit. If it had, like Jenny said, been installed at the time when the contractor was putting in this line, it would be significantly less. Is that not a true statement? No. Okay, that's what I heard.
So. It's price of the unit itself.
You'd have all the same material. You'd have, you know, to go back in and dig in and plug it in.
Where is the vault actually planned to be? Is it comes off Harvey there?
It comes off Harvey Boulevard.
Is it in the street or is it on your property?
It'd be on our property in the rear driveway. It's back there on the east side.
It's where the buildings just got torn down, kind of got the
right on the east side.
Is it between the two greenhouses?
Huh?
On that road, that road. Is that where the line is right now?
That's where that it road? Is now. I had no option. We had to hook this up. American Fork City was basically saying, they basically told me to do it.
And that's Jay down there at water.
Jay, the fire marshal, everybody was saying get this thing done.
The water superintendent.
But did they tell you go ahead and violate the Cedar Hills, your permit that Cedar Hills gave you, and just hook it up? Is that what they told you?
That was the word. Get it.
So when I, because I know all these people right here. In fact, Doug Bateman no longer works for them, so we can scratch him off the list. But so when I can, I know everybody else, so when I call them and ask them, they will tell me that they told you to violate Cedar Hills
proper. One person did, yes.
And who was that?
I'll hold that name until...
Oh. How am I going to make a decision if you're not going to give us the name?
But the general feeling was just get it done. And then we would work, because we knew this was going to take some time to try and get you not to do it. Worst case scenario is I pay the money and put it in. If I have to do it, I have to do it. And that's going to be your decision, whether I do it or not. Okay? And then we go on from there. It'll be painful, but it's not the end of the world.
I have a problem with government requiring $30,000 expenditure when there's other ways that it can be done. And, you know, if it is our money, if it was even half of that and it was my money, then I'd be firing mad if there was a solution that was almost cost-free that would accomplish the same thing, such as allowing easement. So anyway, I think government should always be there to serve the people cost the people money.
It's just from the beginning, it's just made no sense to anybody involved in this. Other than Jeff, and I think your city administrator, your former city administrator, I think they're the ones that saw the need for it. And so there's always been this, what do we do? And so that's why we're here today. That's what has got us to this point. One other thing that we ought to talk about, and this was brought up by Gary, as we got talking about this, I came to Gary and said, Gary, can you help me with this? Can you go talk with Jeff? Can we get some common sense here? Gary's idea was, well, let's just have you annex, and I think he's talked with the council members about this. Let's just have you annex, you're a part of the city, and then we solve the issue. I said, good, let's do it. Okay? I have no problem. I like the idea of being part of Cedar Hills, because 25 years ago when we came here, we were county. We call ourselves Highland Gardens. We're not American Fork City Gardens. So we identify with this North County area, okay? So I agree with the idea of annexing. So I went out and I started talking to people, and there's other people that don't agree with it, and so it can't happen right now, okay? The funeral home does not want to annex. They got offended 15 years ago when they wanted to build their business by the city, and so he's right now he just doesn't want to, but they may change. You know, I think if the city reached out to him and tried to solve some issues there, that could happen, that could change. So it's also about, am I ever going to be a part of a Cedar Hills? Are we ever going to annex into Cedar Hills? I'd like to keep that option open, okay, because I think it's a good option in the future. At some point, I think it's reasonable that us, the funeral home, and the nine homes, that the people down there, and the property I'm going to develop, and Harvey's property, I think it's reasonable that it should be in Cedar Hills. But if you make me put in this meter and spend the money, what's my motivation? Why in 5 years from now or whenever annexation becomes real, why would I want to be a part of it? So I think there's more than just the water meter that we're talking about. It just doesn't make any sense for you. You guys gain nothing by making me put in a meter. You gain nothing. I lose the money, and in the future we both lose, because then we're at odds with each other, and there's just no reason for that to happen.
I totally agree with you. I mean, I think the simple solution is pure annexation.
And, you know, I think Walensky, he's a great guy. I know him quite well.
Well, see,
but he does have a bad taste. I know he does.
And Mayor Geege talked to me about it as well. My recommendation was that that was something that was seriously be considered. There's also 9 homes that would be impacted. That there's kids would have to go to different schools.
They all go.
They would need to go to Lone Peak instead of AF.
I mean, they have a choice. Both are open enrollment now.
Lone Peak is not open enrollment.
Lone Peak is open enrollment.
I'm telling you, my kids go. I had to get special permission because they're in Cedar Hills, and I'm an AF founder.
But they give it.
But my point is, I haven't heard
of anybody not getting it.
My point is, it could change which schools they go to. It could change what resources they have access to, the American Fork Pool, the library, those kinds of things. Those residents need to be made aware of that to be discussed, and they need to give input.
So,
because I don't want to annex 9 residents force them into our city if they don't want to come in.
No, I know at least.
And they won't. Ken knows that this is his fight to have. He knows that he has to convince the majority of those 9 residents.
I don't have to convince them. It's not my fight.
Well, you can't annex and create an island that forces other people.
Exactly, we can't do that.
Actually, he could if he wanted to. There's no state law that says you can't annex in and create an island. It might make some residents unhappy.
But the point is, somebody has to work with residents. American Fork would probably not approve it, and neither would the county.
Maybe.
So,
I mean, I've got 2 big questions for me. One is, why is American Fork holding on to both homes and 2 businesses if they can't even service them with water? So it seems like it just makes sense that they would be in our city.
The question I have for you is,
what's your timeline here? I'm very sympathetic to your issue. I'd like to go back and talk to Jeff Mogg a bit more and understand his point of view as why we can't do some sort of an easement agreement with
my
you.
My timeline is...
Yeah, but I don't want to hold up your business unnecessarily.
Has it hurt our business?
I don't want to hold up your business, and so I'm wondering what your timeline
is. They have till April, and that's when we're going to shut it down.
Right now, American Fork City, we applied for a permit to build our new store last November. And the rumor and the word that I got through different channels was American Fork City is not going to issue us that permit to build this new store until we figure out this problem right here. And I think that was coming from David, your former administrator. I think he put that in their ear, said don't give Highland Gardens their permit until they solve this issue. So am I being held up? Exactly. Am I going to struggle with my season this year? Yeah. Okay. All over something as senseless as do we put a meter in or not? That means nothing. It accomplishes nothing. It's bad for both of us. Okay. It costs me money. It creates animosity between me and you. There's never going to be the chance of annexation. If you did want me to annex in the future, I'd say, okay, I want $30,000 or whatever it costs me plus interest on my investment into that meter. I want the meter taken out because I don't think it's the right thing to do. I've tried to be patient with this. I've been dealing with this for 2 years now, okay? And now we're to this point. Where do we go from here? If you guys say no, I spend the money, I put it in, I get my season going. It can happen next week, okay? I'm not going to lose. I'm eventually going to win. I'm still going to have a business. It's going to just be painful. But it's not good for either of us.
So tonight is just a discussion. It is not an action item, so we're not going to take any votes on anything. So council members that want to have a discussion with Jeff Mogg, I would suggest you do that quickly. And I'll bring this back.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, when it gets brought back, if we could just get a little bit more research done.
On what?
On just what American Fork's saying, what the city's saying, just because I agree with them that nobody has meters. The difference is we're taking water and we're putting it outside of the city limits. That's where the holdup is for me. Yeah. If he was within the Cedar Hills limits, there would be no thing. It's that It's just like Rob had said, you know, if there's another, here's another research thing. If you can figure out how to do it and cost you nothing and cost us nothing, and we can keep that water secure, whether it's an easement or something like that, bring that to us. Had you brought something in today and said, look, guys, I've done this easement and you guys can have access to this and this and this, but just coming in and talking, all I see is pink and green lines, and I don't see how the city's protected. And I've got to protect the city.
So we will bring this back for discussion. There is a letter, an email from American Fork Bend, by the way, and I'll read it to you in the record. So this is from their city engineer, Nestor Gallo, to Jeff Mogg. And it says, thank you, Jeff. I agree with you. The project may be under construction within American Fork city boundaries, but Cedar Hills is the water provider, and consequently any development should follow Cedar Hills standards, specifications, policies, and procedures. So that's American Fork speaking on the record.
Okay. Yeah, just if you can come back and show the easement and all that, where that's all I'm worried about is just Cedar Hills being protected.
And how are you not protected? Because you can't get on property? And
I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know what the whole issues are. I don't know if it's testing water, if it's actual hot tapping off of the lines. I don't know.
But you said you'd be willing to give us an easement there,
sure,
to inspect it. Is that, that's way less expensive than $30,000?
Well, an easement is just
a piece of paper signed.
Piece of paper saying
notarized.
You have a right to get into this property and
right,
inspect it.
Yeah. And if you're willing to do that, I'd say I think that
absolutely. If you can come up, I would work with the city. This is just me. I would work with the city and say, what are your concerns? And if the concerns are metering, you know, just tell us how you're going to do it. Meet those needs in Plan B.
Okay. So let's. Are you guys good with easements?
We'll decide that.
I think we need to.
It's a little more complicated, and there's a cost to inspect it. So you got to figure in something for the inspections.
I think there's a lot more to this,
yeah.
And Jeff Mogg needs to be here in order to present his. So I'm gonna call an end to this discussion. We've already discussed it well. We're not taking any votes.
I know. I want to say
one thing.
I think there's enough between.
One question, okay. And then we're done.
I think there's enough between Rob, myself, and Ben to have some direction to staff to say, staff, could you please investigate what it would take to do an easement, what the inspection costs would be. Let's take a look at that data so we could have some better data to make a decision.
Staff will do that.
It looks like it's also going to require an ordinance change.
A what?
An ordinance change.
Yes. We should make sure we have all of our
data. In my opinion, it could possibly be an ordinance clarification, because the ordinance says, as Jeff quoted, Cedar Hills ordinance requires all service laterals to be metered. I don't think this is a service lateral. This is a main line. It's a main line for fire protection. It's not a service lateral. So I think it could be using a little bit of our ordinance.
And the ordinance, you know, also doesn't distinguish whether it's out of the city or in the city, and we're not following the city.
Our
right?
Ordinance is for our city, though.
Right.
Well, you have plenty of laterals that don't have meters on them.
But we're not following it,
right?
Which has been very clear.
Well, so, let's not get the cart before the horse.
Okay, but my main question to Mr. Stratton.
Right.
So we'll have a further discussion.
Is the meter the expense, or is the check valve? I mean, I'm more concerned with
both. The meter's expensive. It's like $7,000-$8,000 for the meter, and then you call for a double check valve and then a bypass valve. So it's all that plus the vaults plus the installation.
Okay, and you can't do one without the other. I mean, if we just said, let's protect ourselves with at least a double check valve, because these are dead ends. That's the problem. I mean, if we could get in a loop, I think. I mean, I know a little bit about water. I put water in a lot. The problem with this is this gets dead ended, and there's no way to make sure the water doesn't stagnate and then back up into our system.
Don't you have that everywhere in your street of those dead ends?
No, not really.
No, Walmart's fire suppression line actually is a circle, so it comes back into the systems. So yeah, it's never stagnant.
They flush them out once a year. I don't know if that's adequate.
Yeah, I don't know. That's
See, and that's just information we need. We need all that information.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much for being here, Ken. All right. Let's move on. Item number 8, which is an action item on a resolution adopting FY17 budget amendments. Charles?
Okay. We just have a couple items. We had to do a public notice, publish this, so it costs money. So I would suggest that we approve these, whether or not, just so we don't have to notice them again and pay that. If you remember in the budget retreat, there was a spreadsheet that said expenditures for this year, how they're funded, expenditures for next year. The park, it's not in your packet, it's from the budget retreat. The park master plan was in that. Okay, so if you want to look back at your materials from that date, you can see it's how the funding for each project is. So this proposes that we budget adjust so that we can do, I think if we put a number like 40,000, which is what I had in the budget retreat, we should be fine to cover the scope that you guys would require. If for some reason you wanted a larger scope, you could budget amend down the road, but that is the first item. The second item, we've had issues with the AF booster this year and just a little higher repair costs in water. So there's $25,000 for that line item. Are there any questions?
I'm sorry, what are the water construction projects specifically? I mean,
it's just random repairs of the water system.
The AF booster went down near 4600 Cedar Hills Drive.
That was
Went down in July, yeah. And that needed a major motor repair.
Okay.
And that's back up and running, but that was an unforeseen expense.
Okay.
Okay, any questions for Charles? If not, this is a motion item, so, and there is a suggested motion by staff. If someone like to make a motion, I'll take that.
I move that we adopt resolution number 2-21-2016A. 2017A. A resolution adopting the amended 2016-2017 fiscal year budget for the city of Cedar Hills, Utah.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Bailey seconds. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 10, which is also an action item. This is amending Monday and Tuesday resident rental rates for the Vista Rooms, specifically for weddings.
This is for weddings and corporate events.
Thank you.
So the council adopted resident rates for Monday and Tuesday nights, which are $20 per each side of the room. So a resident could come in and rent the entire Vista Room for $40 an hour. And what we're seeing is it's been a benefit to the community. It's been used a lot, and we want to keep doing it. I think it's a great thing to get our residents into this building. I don't think staff has any issues with community rates. However, on weddings, we get a high traffic amount of people in here, and we're finding that it's more costly to the city than a normal community event would be. So what we're proposing is, I believe, $450 to rent the Vista Room for a wedding and for a corporate event, and that would be for the whole night. So
would that be the whole room?
Yes.
Okay. Would we do half of that?
We possibly could, but I think every wedding's been for the whole room.
Okay. But I mean a corporate event maybe.
Event could be half. So you can see the existing non-resident rate of $1,550 for the full room for 7 hours, and we're proposing $450 for the full room for 6 hours, so it's still quite a steep discount for the residents. But at the same time, we're still covering our costs. For weddings, we get residents coming in, they'll schedule it, and then they want to meet with staff and go over their plans for the weddings, go over the setup, go over what's going to happen that night. And then that night, they still have a lot of demands on staff. So it's not like a typical, like if you've had a scout court of honor or church event. They're very low demand, but for a wedding, it's still very high demand on staff. So what we're proposing is a higher rate to reflect that.
Chandler, so you have labor costs added in here. What do you know per hour per site? And maybe you haven't figured this out, but what all your fixed and variable costs are to like tonight, we're going to be in here for about 3 hours. How much is that actually costing the city?
You'd have to go in and break down the utilities. You'd have to go in and
appreciate
the building.
Right, right. I understand all that. Have we ever done that?
We can estimate what it is. We don't have meters on every room.
Yeah. Obvious. And we might have, the different light bulbs in.
There has been a spreadsheet, I think, when they first did the cost.
Okay.
The initial cost, I think there was.
So right now we have a 5-hour rental fee for a wedding, and it was $200, and the labor costs were $140. Okay. Of the remaining $60, how much of that, and Charles, maybe you're the best, of the remaining $60, how much of that went to electricity, all the other costs, wear and tear?
Let me back out. Let's say that $160. That still doesn't cover the times that they came in and sat down with staff.
Now, those are the numbers that I'm looking for.
That's not,
because if we're going in the red
here, okay, well, we rented the room for 6 hours and we had one person here for 6 hours. That's an easy cost to calculate.
Right.
But the number of times they call, the number of times they come in and to go for their diagram setup, because Becky she's great at giving the customer what they want. And so she'll go over and sit down with them and say, okay, how many tables do you need? How many chairs do you need? Where do you need them set up?
Right.
Who do you need them set up? And they'll do it too. So it's not covering those costs as well as the takedown.
And that's what I wanted to know. Are we breaking even? I'm not.
No.
I don't want to make money on our residents per se on this program, but I think we ought to lease. It should balance out.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say no. If we were to include the depreciation, the wear and tear on the building, the utility
Becky's
costs,
extra hours.
Yeah, Becky's extra hours, and then the time to clean up. We require the residents to clean up, but they're doing it very fast. So we're finding that in many cases, we're still having to come in and do it again.
So Ben, this is hard to quantify. So I think this is this is staff's best estimate, if you will, for breaking even without charging extra for the residents. This is their best guess for what break even is.
And we're only changing the wedding rate?
Wedding and corporate. So if you were to look at if you were to look at this form that Greg's put together, you see that there's party, there's young women's activity, there's an art show, business party. Most of these young women's activity, ward party, most of these are resident events, like Lone Peak cross country, Lone Peak youth football. That's our residents. We want to get them into this building. A wedding is not necessarily purely resident event. A corporate event is not a purely resident event. They may know somebody that works for their company that lives in Cedar Hills that has access to a resident rate, but it's not a resident event. So we want to kind of distinguish between that, but still give a resident rate discount.
So I'm quite supportive of this. I think when we originally made this change, we weren't imagining that suddenly weddings would be able to be here for $40. What I don't have is I'm not seeing a memo for item number 10 with proposed new rates. All I see is this chart.
I think it's 450 is what they're saying.
Sorry, it's if you look at the background of finding on the very bottom, there's three lines there. There's the existing resident rate, a proposed resident rate, and then an existing non-resident rate.
I'm not seeing that.
I'm not either. Oh, we don't have a memo for 10.
Yeah, we don't have.
We never got a memo.
We have a memo for 10.
That's what I'm trying to explain.
All we have is that. That's what I apologize. So, you can pass that around.
This is why I was lost during
the
discussion.
Did you get?
We got
this
that,
page?
But we didn't get the memo.
We got that page.
You got this page. Okay. Well. Yeah. All right. Well, that one slipped through the cracks. I apologize. So you can see that the existing rate is $20 per hour per side of the room. So if you're going to come in and rent the Vista room, it's $40 for an hour. So if you're renting it for 4 hours, it's $160. It's a steal of a deal. But like I said, that doesn't include staff's time to prepare for the event and meet with the individual. So we're kind of going backwards on those types of events.
Yeah.
So, no, I apologize that memo did not
quite
put it in the packet.
Take all my questions and just throw them away, because now that I see that.
Yeah, so for everybody else, it basically says staff recommends the new rate of $450 for any Monday, Tuesday resident rate going into effect for any future bookings only for a wedding, corporate event, or a large event up to 6 hours. How would you define a large event?
I don't know.
We'd have to work with residents and say
we'd have to work with the business. I mean, we'd have to look and see the number of expected people to attend. But my biggest distinction is it a community event or is it not a community event? I mean, a wedding is a private event, and includes the community, beyond the community. A corporate event is a private event that probably doesn't include many in the community. That's where I would distinguish it. I think we really would limit it to.
Can you send the memo down here so I can share it with
wedding
the
events.
Two people to my left?
Yeah, so the motion, unfortunately, isn't the right motion to give. Because it says quarter, $50, period, for all resident events on Monday, Tuesday.
Can I see that?
While you're looking at that, I got a quick question. It only shows two events in January. I'm really surprised about that.
That's
two resident events.
So the Mondays and Tuesdays were full of non-resident events. Are we filling up on Mondays and Tuesdays, or are we...
Or they're just
They may not. January is not a heavy time for events.
I'm just shocked that at that rate we don't find something. You know, someone in the city doesn't have a need of this room at that rate every Monday and Tuesday. I'm shocked.
I'm shocked too.
Well, but if you remember, you can use any ward or stake center for free. So
that's true.
It's still money.
But it doesn't have this view.
So. I agree, but it depends on your event if you can afford it or not.
I'm surprised. Yeah, it's interesting.
Okay, so I have a motion that I can make. That.
Please. Do you need this? That's
no.
Correct motion.
I wrote my own. I move that we approve a new resident rate of $450 for a large private event on Mondays and Tuesdays, including weddings and corporate events.
Okay. I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Mr. Bailey seconds. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Thank you very much. Motion passes unanimously.
Can I ask a quick question since we're on the subject of the Vista Room real quick? I can't remember if we ever made a policy on this or not, but we recently had a resident approach. Well, a couple of us did a resident approach. She wants to host a dance for the community at no charge to the teens, and she's willing to pay for the DJ and the food, but she wants to use the room for free. And I can't remember if we have made a policy on that. If somebody wants to utilize our facility at no cost to residents and provide it to them for a community event, did we ever create a policy for? I mean, I know Diane Farr uses it. Do we charge her to host her gardens class?
No.
And I know we didn't charge Hope for Utah to put on an event here, and I'm assuming we don't choose AF. So my question is, when residents want to do a community event like that where they're willing to cover the cost of hosting and they're offering it at no cost to our residents, is the policy we're willing to let them utilize the facility at no cost?
Are they selling anything?
No.
They're not advertising anything. It's not it's purely just free dance.
She's concerned about the teens in our area getting together and getting to know each other outside school. So she wants to have a dance for seventh graders and older at the end of school, and that she will pay for the food and the DJ. She just wants to use the facility at no cost.
I think it's a great idea.
Can I offer a suggestion on this?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of opinion that could vary on what is really a community service or not. I'll give two examples. Mayor Deegi met with the group regarding the snowbird, and he felt that was a I had a group that I was involved with from the base of the Constitution Service with Becky Young to have a speech here. So we paid $20 for an hour. I think it's something
that's. Policy for that?
There's a policy.
I'm suggesting that we make that policy somehow between
that
now and
the
wanted to come in here for free and use it. At least be a consensus that we agree that this is a community event.
Yeah.
And
but it's not on the radar.
I need to have the council approve them all, and then maybe we just don't like you, so we don't want to approve your event that you're hosting. I don't want to do that. That doesn't seem fair, right?
If it's not really benefiting the community, it might be something that I believe in, but no one else really believes in. That means it's benefiting me and my group, you know, more than the community overall. I think it should at least be a consensus.
I think you're raising an issue that maybe this is just hard to define. What is a community event, right? Because somebody could argue, hey, my Scout Troop Eagle Court Honor Award ceremony is open to anybody to come.
Or my wedding.
You're all welcome.
Yeah. I think there was a difference between what we're talking about here. I was serving in the official capacity of the mayor. That's different.
And so, well, and but I'm open to this discussion in terms of if we want to create some language on this. But I think we did we vote on the Vista Room rates, didn't we? So let's move on. Was your question answered sufficiently?
Well, I need to get back with her and let her, because she's also looking at Alpine Country Club. So I'd like to, I mean, she's a Cedar Hills resident. I'd like to be able to say we want to work with you, but.
Can we ask our attorney here what he suggests we do in this case?
We can't take action on that because.
No, it's a discussion only. But I don't know if it needs a policy.
That's why we have you here. Questions.
Yeah, I've been listening to the conversation, a very lively debate. Part of the problem with not having a defined policy on how you're going to interact this way is you do potentially open yourself up to discrimination. And so what if it's the most objectionable club that you could think of that claims that they are simply providing a community education, and you've provided it to the most objectionable club that somebody else could think of as well. And so what I would recommend that you do is you potentially kick it back to staff, maybe a couple of you work with staff to come up with a defined policy as to how you're going to treat it. Certainly it's noble to want to provide the facility at no cost. That's not the issue. The issue is how do you decide what qualifies as a community event.
So let me make a suggestion, Jenny. Would you be okay if at our next meeting we bring back some language in order to craft a policy? And if that is enacted as is, then there's a separate item to approve what this lady wants to do. Because I think it's a great idea.
I don't think we need a separate item if we have a policy. I mean, we're already doing it, so we just need to...
Let me ask you a question. Because we're talking about resident rates, so we're talking about Mondays and Tuesday nights. Yes. Is this lady's event on a Friday night where it might be competing with a wedding?
Yes, but she knows she can't... if it's already booked.
And that's where, because if she's going to book it right now.
But that's my point, is this a community center or a reception? So if it's not booked already and a resident wants to use it for free for a community event, do we say no because receptions are a priority?
When is the dance?
Well, I don't have a date yet, but I'm saying she knows she has to look and see what because the calendar is available, right? Anyone can go look and see if it's available.
Okay, so I think I understand what we're doing. You wanted to see if we can create some language which allows this lady or another person to be able to use this room for a teen party, if you will, if on a Friday or Saturday night, which is when she wants to use it, it's not being booked.
For any community event, whether it's Diane's class or Hope for Utah or whatever.
Because if she's wanting to book it April, May, when school's getting out, I mean, that's still a ways away where we could have multiple weddings during that time.
Yeah, I'm not saying we kick anybody out.
But if it's within 30 days, we know we're not going to get a wedding.
So she won't have much time.
That's different. So maybe
plan,
what I'm saying is if the Sailors are Friday right now available in June and she wants that, are you saying we would tell her, no, you can check back at June 1st and see if there's an opening? I would prefer that we not say, if she comes first, then we let her use
it. How much advance time are you wanting to give? Because if you say June and we're in February, there's a greater than 50% chance that it could be booked out.
No, I'm not saying if someone's already booked it, that we kick them out.
No, but how much advance notice are you wanting? Are you wanting 2 weeks? Are you wanting 3 weeks?
As much as they want to give us.
But that's unreasonable.
I guess my big concern there is that's going to put a huge damper on staff's revenues for the year. And I understand that it's a community center, and there's this balance here. We've got to make money on this room, but we've also got to open it up to the community. But at this far out, it's almost a given that we're going to have a wedding that night.
There has to be like a timeline where, and I think staff probably knows this, is that if you have a Friday night that's not booked within 30 days, isn't there a greater than 50% chance that it's not going to be booked?
Correct.
Yeah, yes. So it would have to be within 30 days or so.
Why?
Because are you really wanting to allow someone to schedule something 6 months from now?
If it's a community center and a resident of our community wants to use it for a community event, yes.
On a Friday night?
Yes.
If the youth
city council came to us and said they want to hold a dance and they want to schedule it for some Friday in August,
Would we tell them no? They're our youth city council. Of course we would let
them. Or the arts committee or the parks and trails committee.
Or the fireman's breakfast. We would say yes.
But there's a difference between a city committee versus a resident.
Would you just come up with one?
Right. So one solution here is we go to the YCC and say, hey, would you like to host a
dance? Very slippery slope.
This makes me very nervous.
There's still staffing requirements.
This shouldn't make anyone nervous. This is a basic question of discussion between do we value revenue or do we value community events?
Well, someone's paying for
it. And I know where the mayor stands. Clearly on the side of
revenue. Well, it is them through their taxes.
I'm hearing Jenny say she stands on the side of we want more community events.
Well, I think you're implying that if I think there has to be parameters, then I'm anti-resident.
No, clearly not. It's a matter of values.
But I understand what staff is saying, and I think it is unreasonable to say that someone 6 months from now could reserve a highly reservable room unless the council is going to say for that evening, we don't care what weddings that you have, that what you could potentially have that night once a year, or twice a year, whatever, we're going to forego any revenue.
I am personally perfectly comfortable saying we will allow up to X numbers of events per month so that we're not going to completely overwhelm and kill our revenue stream, but we might say maybe there's on a Friday or Saturday night, a very, very important night, maybe once a month we might do this if somebody comes along with a significant event.
Once a month.
That's really open to all residents. A big dance would be perfectly fit into this, right? As opposed to constitutional conservatives meeting where maybe you might have, I don't know, how many people did you have there?
That was not on a Friday or Saturday night.
Yeah, usually we'll try to push them to Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, a highly bookable event. Because if there's a compromise, we can say you can have the room for free, but do it on a night that's not in as much demand. Then
the compromise
could
be like a dance. You don't plan a dance out more than 30 days.
Well, she's in February and she's doing it now. She's planning it now for the end of school year. Yeah.
If you're planning a dance for that many people, yes, you do have to plan out far in advance to get a space.
Especially at the end of the year when those kinds of things are busy, if she wants a DJ and all that kind of stuff that she wants to pay for.
Yeah.
Good luck on that one,
Shannon.
I don't know. This is a slippery slope.
If you allow if you just say once a week you go to community events, we'd be happy with three-quarters.
We'll come back and discuss this.
You can look at the resident rate now and see it's not being abused. It's not like we have people clamoring to utilize this facility at no cost or at cheaper cost. It's not being abused.
Part of that could be that we're pushing it to Monday and Tuesday nights.
Right, but even then, you've got a handful of people who have actually benefited.
You're right.
Okay, let's move on. Item number 11, which is a discussion on the capital improvements plan motor pool fund.
Right.
Charles, go ahead.
Okay. On our capital projects fund, we plan on having Bay Hill park done in the current year, so there is nothing budgeted for the next year. There's also the golf maintenance building that's plan on being done in the current fiscal year, so there is nothing budgeted there. It's a very simple capital projects fund budget. There is still some money set aside for some improvements at Heritage Park that we're also trying to get grant money to help pay for that. And there's the Deerfield development, assuming that we bought the Deerfield land by the end of June. If we do not, then that we would put that back on the plan before the budget is finalized. And the widening is related to the Deerfield Park. So are there any questions on the expenditures that are budgeted?
I have one really dumb nitpicky question.
Okay.
I've never seen a line item for mass transit before, and I'm curious what we spent $12 on.
Oh, it's a pass-through that we just were budgeting. We used to, several years ago, receive money through sales tax, and then it would just be passed through to the county. And we still get old sales tax returns that people have reconciled from several years back. So we were getting a little bit of money, but
I see.
Not hardly anything.
Okay. Good, thank you.
Mm-hmm. On the revenue side, so either through the sale of possibly the commercial land or through financing, we could fund the development possibly.
Question real quick.
Mm-hmm.
This was brought up by a resident this week by email to us. So there were some people that felt that the Cottonwood lots, if we sold them all, we would use some of that to pay off some golf course, part of our golf course debt. Is that completely unreasonable, or is that something that we could consider doing once we get these sold?
So I don't know. My understanding from the Golf Finance Committee and talking to Eric Johnson, our previous attorney, is when the bond was refunded, there's special language in there that if we sold St. Andrew's Estates, we could use that money, if we chose to pay down the debt. That is the only land that's in the bond covenants that allows us to call it before the 10 years. So it was 2012. Normally, we wouldn't have a chance to call it till 2022. And if you were trying to use that money for debt service, you would just have to let it sit and earn interest. Or
so you can't pay just a small portion.
You couldn't pay extra. It's just not callable until then.
Okay. So Rob, I also was never the plan.
Okay. Yeah.
I think this is a somewhat of a vague idea, just because I remember when I first came on the council, it was clear that money from St. Andrew's Estates was supposed to be used to pay down debt.
Right.
But I remember council members at the time saying there's not a requirement that Cottonwood lots be used to pay down debt, but you should. I tend to agree with that.
No, actually, I was really intimately involved with this plan when this plan was made. When St. Andrew's Estates was taken out as a golf course hole and turned into a plan for development, the city spent money to revamp that hole, to take it out and to reconfigure the course. The sale of Cottonwood lots was supposed to go back into the city to repay it, right? Remember, we used to keep track of the debt that the golf course owed to the city. This is part of the debt the golf course owes to the city. We paid the golf course money, essentially, in order to reconfigure the land, and Cottonwood lots was supposed to reimburse us for the cost of that.
That's where that
accounting was supposed to go.
That became, but that's not happening either.
No. Nothing.
Well,
you can do nothing to tie
it
into city council's hands.
Right.
I'm just clarifying historically what the previous council had set up as their grand plan.
Yeah, that's not what's happening. And well,
the money is going back into our coffers.
That's why I said it's vague, is because there's something that council members, when I first came on, said, which is not happening, and the money was supposed to be paid back to the city in the capital projects plan, I believe. But it's being moved over to pay for litigation costs, which yes. We're grateful for.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
So I guess I just want Mr. Shaw to just to verify if we paid down $100,000 or $200,000 on the golf course debt, would that trigger a problem?
So there is a mandatory redemption provision, but the sale of St. Andrews does not automatically trigger the mandatory redemption. And that's, like Charles says, that's the only call provision prior to 2022. Is that when it is?
So, Rob, are you talking about if we had some money after the litigation costs were over and we sold some Cottonwood lots, there was a couple $100,000 from that, and you could put it into capital improvements or you could pay down debt and just council could make a decision. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I'm just asking if legally we could use that. That's exactly what I'm asking. Legally we could do that.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity.
I mean, Charles could check, but I believe that there's some callable bonds in the next year or so that conceivably, isn't that right?
Are you
because there's
talking about different from golf?
Yeah, because when you take a look at our bonds, there's various series and there's various call dates.
We only have one that we, and we're already paying the max extra based on, it's a utility revenue bond. It was originally issued in 2009. And when we renegotiated the rate from 5.99 to 3.02, we took the savings and apply it towards extra principal every year.
So let's just say that if that were to occur, we can look at that option. Because at this point, I don't think we know.
I'm hearing from Shara, we can't do it. We can't pay extra.
Yeah, but we don't know when that's going to happen. Because it's conceivable that we may not sell cottonwood lots for a few years. And so it could happen. So all I'm saying is we can look at that option when it occurs.
And I would just add to that, I know that we have told residents, this council has told residents that we would use money from Cottonwood Lots to get Bay Hill Park finished, and that's what we're anticipating. And so if that then gets reallocated, that will not make many people happy.
But we're not using Cottonwood Lots to for the most part, to do Bay Hill Park.
And for the stuff that we need to have done, like the park equipment and the restroom, we were anticipating
the
using that.
The ones we haven't funded yet.
The ones we haven't funded yet.
Remember, we've only funded the actual construction.
A few years ago, we were really trying hard to find a way to fund Bay Hill. And so when we saw these Cottonwood Lots, it was brought up, hey, when we sell these, we can pay for Bay Hill. In the meantime, the city has been very has been able to put some money from the general fund in that will pay for it anyway.
The unfunded portions too? Okay.
It's all been budgeted up to what we need, much more than what the current phase. And if you go, I can email it to you if you can't find it, but if you go to the budget retreat, it'll break down. There's $600,000 set aside for litigation out of the capital projects fund, and there's still, I can tell you how much there is for Bay Hill. There is, dang it, I need glasses.
Shush, just because you're younger.
Gosh. So there's $700,000 set aside. Bay Hill, I believe the bid came in much.
It was like less. 446, oh, yeah. I think.
Yes.
But that was.
So we have money set aside for equipment.
Okay, that's good.
But some of that came from the previous sales of the cotton blocks that were already closed, right?
You could say that. Yeah. It's all unrestricted.
Money is fungible.
Right. They all went unrestricted.
Yes.
All right, let's move on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the motor pool fund. It's pretty simple. We try to rotate about three or four vehicles a year. There's 2 1-ton pickups that we're replacing with a diesel and a 1-ton. The diesel have proved to be better resale, plus they're our best vehicle on the icy roads in the winter for plowing. Right now we only have one. Last time we sold our diesel, we actually sold it for more than what we paid. After 6 years. So the plan is to keep the diesels for 6 years, but to have two diesels instead of one. And then the third vehicle is the zoning vehicle. So is there any questions on that? We're trying to help Public Works have a backup truck in case they need it in a bad storm. So
I think you do a great job of managing the motor pool. So
he does.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. Any questions for Charles on the motor pool fund? Let's move on to item number 13, which is a discussion on surplus property. Mr. Goodwin, I think you've got this.
Yeah. Mayor and Council, we have two surplus properties we want to discuss with you tonight, and I think they each need to be treated a little bit differently. A while ago, when was it? Actually a dead-end street. Looks like it's a street that would continue on south, and it actually dead-ends there. It's a cul-de-sac coming up from the north that terminates right below that.
So that was a dead end street. It's going to be a dead end street for eternity. It's about 0.6 acres in size. It does not meet the threshold, in my mind, of a significant piece of property greater than having a value of greater than $50,000. So we want to, and there's a neighbor there that would like to purchase that land from the city. Currently, it's unmaintained. Staff's recommendation is to sell this piece of property.
And it's half an acre?
No, 0.06.
No,
0.06. No, it's just back where it's from. And it's not really.
Is it the.
I believe it's the person to the west of I bought.
What sits on it now?
Cars. They use it as a car.
So this isn't the one that comes.
No.
So they're using it as its.
They use it as its. If it's already private. The city. This really is a piece of property. The city would really like to get off of its hands. We don't use it. We have no intention to use it. There's no intention of that road ever being punched through. There being a hole. So it really isn't a junk piece of land, as a sense. The other parcel is the one in red. Now this is the one that's a little bit more interesting. It's about a quarter of an acre, I believe. And it's landlocked. It currently houses some abandoned utilities. This is where the State Development Center used to have a water tank, and it's buried in this land somewhere. And you see that yellow, between those two yellow lines is a 80 rod ditch over there, that's an active utility. It's 80 feet wide that you that easement.
It's so active.
It is active, yeah.
And it's buried.
There's two different utilities. There's an abandoned well. Abandoned tank.
Yeah, I know. I've been on this property.
So that one's abandoned. That one's gone. But there's an active ditch right after it.
There's a ditch.
Yeah.
So it's not even buried.
It could be buried. It could be a buried portion. So, with it, it's got it, right? Then it goes under the road there. So, my guess is that it is private. How far down it is, I don't know. I just know that it is part of the 80 rod. So, you see that ditch has an 80 foot wide easement claim through that property, and it's right through the dead center of that property. The homeowner there, Lot 11, has interest in purchasing this land and developing it as a single. It's nice. It's a quarter acre. However, the easements, staff's recommending that it not be sold as a land
development. Okay,
you can build it. You can.
So they don't want to build on it.
They could get the easement abandoned, but they'd have to grant 80 feet somewhere else, and I don't know that leaves them. Depending on how.
Have they approached you?
Yes, they have. On a number of occasions.
Okay, because I brought this up with David a year or so ago, and it was sort of my idea that, hey, let's see if we can bring the city some money for some of this property to develop.
And there's still the potential that we can divest ourselves in this land, just not form a single land lot. And this would
be the two adjacent.
And that's my next thought, is that this, to my mind, a quarter acre does mean a significant piece of property that's worth $50,000, so there would have to be public notices and public hearings that would have to take place for ourselves. So there are two parcels here that we'd like to divest ourselves of, however they need to be treated differently.
So you want some feedback from the council in terms of whether you have a recommendation to surplus these two pieces of property. This is not an action item, but council can give some direction. And so
if the council wants to surplus them, in the case of the REV, you obviously go through the legal process of noticing that it's surplus property. And even identifying that not the ability to put a home on it.
I think we checked into this. The city has no intended use for either of these, right? Can't conceive of any time in the future where we may use these. There's no easements that would, you know, make us want to do this. So would it be acceptable to council if we bring this back? This needs to be an action item. Probably not so.
Next time.
So we'll bring it back in our next meeting so that you guys can vote on this, but you can hear what staff's recommendation is that there's no downside to doing this. Thank you.
But that we don't suggest that as a single family.
Say that again.
But you're suggesting that we just approve it to be sold and not as a
sold as that and not.
The only problem with that is I think any parcel could be buildable. I wouldn't restrict it because if they figure out a way to pipe the thing and reroute an easement, they could make it buildable. But
the other issue is that there's
no frontage. No, I know. They have to buy 11 and they do it.
There would have to be a number of things.
Flag lot. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff.
But very difficult.
But don't restrict it. Let them buy it with the potential if he wants to work on it for 5 years.
Okay. First, oh, we also want to mention there the abandoned water tank does present possibly some liability. So we have to look into that. So we may have to get rid of that as a city.
So we'll craft some language around the abandoned tank as well. So the last item, which we did handle during a work session, but I want to publicly for council session say, we talked about whether to put out the state of the city even if it's late and council agreed, so we will do that. Now, that's all of our items. I will take a motion to adjourn. Motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much.
Thank you.